Happy Culture Readers. It's Jim Tew here again. This month I'm reviewing with you my November 2025 article on equalizing colony populations. I subtitled it Trying to Make Weak Colonies into Good Colonies. I know it's the wrong time of the year. Nobody equalizes colonies in November. But spring will be here in just a short while, and it'll be time to manage bees again. So it was on my mind because I'd spent some of this past summer trying to equalize packages. So I kept thinking about it, and here it is. I had to occasionally equalize colonies that I started from those packages because one of them went queenless. And then it just gave me nothing but a headache. So even now, it's significantly a smaller colony than the other one. I just bought two packages just to have some package bees. So I've already admitted that the season's wrong for equalizing colonies, but I just want to talk through it because it's so typical of beekeeping. It's such a relative thing. I've addressed this concept in previous articles, and I think Kim and I have done podcasts on it, so I'm probably belaboring the point. But it's one of the fundamental things that beekeepers can do to help stabilize colonies that have become needy for either genetics or poor beekeeper procedures or just bad luck. So I'm going to try it again, and I'm sure next spring I'll be out there making the same mistakes, making the same guesses that I've done all these years. Most of my bee colonies are respectable right now, but some are not. Some, in fact, are outright small. I wrote an article once in defense of the small hive, and I went into extremes to defend why some of my hives are smallish. Indeed, can I confess to you that I prefer to work small hives? They're more enjoyable. In many ways, they're just as educational. And you don't have all that burr comb broken honey, and you don't have all the bees to deal with, and probably have a better chance of finding the queen. So I like the smaller hives, but boy, I tell you, if you want to produce honey or do some adequate pollination work, you've got to have production hives. You just mix those small hives with the stronger hives in your yards? I do. I think most of us do, but we all know that those small colonies are in harm's way because the bigger ones, given the chance, will rob the small ones out. But alternatively, should colonies be allowed to express themselves, some large, some small, some productive, some not productive, but all in the same yard? Ideally, in a perfect bee world, no, you wouldn't. In the real world, I suspect it happens all the time. The smaller colony that is undersized needs to be evaluated and addressed. An accomplished, dedicated beekeeper would probably standardize their colonies to equalize the colonies in the yard so that all are similarly sized. In general, more honey is obtained from two good colonies compared to the honey crop from one excellent colony and one small colony. Plus, if it doesn't grow, the small colony will go into winter weak with all the inherent wintering survival problems. And lastly, it's easier to anticipate equipment needs and management procedures if all the colonies are the same. Essentially, everything you're doing to each colony is what you just did to the previous colony, and it's what you'll do to the next colony. That seems to be the program management for most commercial beekeepers. Colonies really can be equalized anytime they can be safely opened, but obviously we're not going to be doing this in the winter. So warmer seasons are the best. Through many years of breeding and colony management, I would speculate that we now have colonies that are considerably larger than they would normally be in the wild state. In a contorted way, small colonies may actually be more normal and large colonies, more natural. Are all people the same height? Obviously not. Why do we expect all beehives to naturally house populations the same size? So some colonies are genetically predetermined to be smaller than others. Depending again on the vagueness of genetics, smaller hives may also be as productive as larger hives in some instances. True, 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 larger hives would hypothetically gather more nectar, but simply by having more mouths to feed, they would also consume more honey. So the answer to the question, do larger populations always produce more honey than small populations, is begged, but I don't have a clear answer. But in general, I'm a beekeeper, so I like big colonies for honey-producing units. Need to evaluate that small hive, though. Why is it small? Is it sick? Does it appear to be suffering from a disease or a pest? If so, you can be helpful here by doctoring whatever the problem is. Again, colony genetics should be considered. The colony's queen may have a genetic predisposition toward her offspring being affected by some disease or pest. There's not much you can do about that other than requeen to address the problem, But don't overlook this point. The colony's recovery from a disease or pest will be slow so far as you and I are concerned. If a colony is sick, just like me, I want to take some cure for it, and then boom, I want to be better. Same for my beehive. I want them to recover quickly, and they usually don't. Many times the entire honey production from the present season will be totally lost. As far as surplus honey, the colony will spend the current nectar production season convalescing. But after having a look, you find that there is no obvious disease or pest present, then blame the queen. It's the beekeeper's universal remedy. So requeen, requeen, requeen. My current opinion is very nearly completely changed from what it was in years past, and I have no doubt that it'll change again. In many previous articles, I've defended marginal queens, hoping that things would improve, or having no guarantee that the queen I paid $35, $40, $50 for would be any better. And also, newer beekeepers may be intimidated when attempting to supplant a failing queen with another. Well, get over it, has been my recent opinion. That's kind of harsh. I don't mean for it to be, but there's just no other way to learn. I and countless other authors have addressed the subject of queen failure and replacement. I wrote an article entitled 101 Reasons That a Queen Gets Replaced for this magazine, between you and me. It wasn't really 101 reasons. I routinely tell audiences that I'm tenderhearted. I don't like killing a queen for anything but the very best reasons. But in a perfect bee management world, routine queen replacement should be the norm. Don't waste your time or the colony's time with a marginal or failing queen. So in my imaginary perfect yard, I have a strong colony positioned by a smaller colony. A smaller colony is apparently disease-free. So what should I do? Very importantly, I want to say again, be patient. A profound equalization can take several trips before the task is complete. If you requeen, transfer brood and adult bees, and exchange hive positions at one time, so much change will be going on at once that too much confusion may result. That's why I said two or three trips may be required. Be patient. I suspect the queen in the smaller hive should be retired. In fact, while you're buying queens, you probably ought to go ahead and get a queen for the larger hive because probably it's going to need it too this same season. I'm now more comfortable with the concept of annual requeening than I was just a few years ago when the general recommendation was to requeen every 2 years. beekeepers, I didn't put this in the article, and why am I even saying it? But when I started in beekeeping, queens routinely lived 2 years and would frequently go 5 years and beyond. So that's a world that doesn't exist anymore. So it's difficult for me to say to requeen every year, because that is not the foundation of my bee experience, but it's the real world now. You'll need to give yourself and your queen producer time to get the replacement queens to you. It'll probably take a couple of weeks. During the warm season, to get these replacement queens may be tricky to do. Sometimes they're hard to get. While you wait, the season's passing. So it's like your clock is ticking, but there's nothing to be done about that. But it finally all comes together, and you've received the new queens for these hypothetical colonies, so you can proceed with the requeening process. In this perfect bee world, the nectar flow is still ongoing. Any hive manipulation is, of course, simpler during a nectar flow. However, if there's no flow, just expect the colonists to be more defensive. And you have to always watch for robbing behavior from the other colonies in your yard. You got a lot of options, and you got to make a lot of guesses. The common procedure for colony equalization is to move capped or uncapped brood, move adult bees, transfer frames of honey, and lastly, exchange colony positions. Everything I've just listed, 1 through 4, are all imprecise, and it's going to require you to use your beekeeping skill. When you move brood, of course, everything is a variable. The time of the year, the nectar flow on or off, how many hives are in the yard, your ability to do this process, how dry is the weather, how many bees are flying, everything is a changeable variable. Beekeepers, all you can do is just use your best experience. Give it your best guess. If you must guess, I guess then I would say be conservative. But there's no other way to do this. There's no other way to gain experience. If you use open brood early in the season, you wouldn't want to overload the smaller colony with uncapped brood. Obviously, immature brood requires feeding and incubating. So I'll just say something like 8 frames of open brood would overwhelm 2 frames of adult bees in a cool climate in early May. Of course, that's an exaggeration, but that'd be too much. In a warmer climate, you and your colony could get away with a heavier open brood shift, but still, don't go crazy. More like 2 or 3 frames. At the risk of getting on your nerves, be patient. Be conservative. Cap brood is more forgiving. It's already been fully fed, and much of the incubation requirement is passed. And this May season that I've arbitrarily chosen, most cool nights have passed, but if you give too many frames of capped or open brood for that matter, and the colony has to pull back into a cluster, brood could die from exposure to these cool temperatures. So I'm betting again that something like 1 to 3 frames would be a pretty typical number of frames to transfer. Adult bees can be shaken from brood frames into the smaller hive. Watch for several things, and you know what the first one is. Don't accidentally shake the queen from the stronger colony into the smaller unit. Since you may damage developing larvae, don't harshly bounce the brood frames on the other woodenware or jam them around. Just give the frame a good shake just above the smaller colony. You won't get them all off. I bet you 10 to 15% of the bees will cling to the comb, no matter how hard you shake. And realize, too, that many of the shaken adult bees will soon return to the parent colony. So shake more than is necessary. So if you think you've got enough, maybe shake one more frame. Finally, if you're concerned about the safety of the queen in the smaller hive, or you're putting in that many adult bees on top of this colony, why don't you reconsider caging her for a day or so? until those bees have settled back down. So this has been hard to follow verbally, I expect. So just for the sake of discussion, and due to all of these things that can vary, I want to make up a hypothetical situation between a large hive and a small hive, two hives that I would like to make more equal. Let's say the larger hive has a queen of unknown age. It's got 10 frames of brood, 17 frames of adult bees, and 10 frames of capped honey. And let's say my make-believe smaller hive has a queen that's producing a spotty pattern, 2 frames of brood, some capped, some uncapped, 3 frames of honey, and maybe about 7 frames of adult bees. So it's hardly a third the size of the other. It's about 30% of the larger hive. The brood nest area in both hives is in 2 deeps, even though the smaller unit's not really using the top deep. So first, in the smaller hive, I replace the queen with a new queen, and then I wait for her to be established in this weak colony until I see eggs. I'll probably see her, too, if the colony is that small. Those eggs are my cue that the new queen is accepted by the bees in the smaller hive, but she won't be fully accepted till some of those bees are actually mature and are her offspring. So still be careful with her. This requeening process may take about 2 weeks. Due to the trauma that I'm about to cause the larger hive, I've decided not to replace the queen in the larger unit at this time. But I make a mental note that she should be replaced yet this season. So I use that smoke. I don't like smoke, but you got to use smoke. And I smoke both colonies with meaningfulness and purpose. And then I open both units. In this perfect world, they're sitting side by side. I review my perspective on how each is doing. It's late May now, but I've still got a nectar flow that'll be ongoing for a while. It's after lunch on a nice day and the bees are free flying. So I remove 2 imaginary supers from the parent colony. They've got some honey in them, but they're mostly empty. They're irrelevant. I just set them aside. I pull the 3 center frames from the top deep, and yes, I should have taken out the side frames first, but I put in the article that I'm a beekeeper who's in a hurry, and I don't want to drag this process out. So if you can pull frames out from the side, if you got to do what you got to do, pull the center frames out. But of course, you run the risk of rolling the queen up. But in my story here, let's just say we don't see her. In order not to have the queen jump frames, as I look at these 3 frames, I temporarily set them in an empty deep that I brought along for this purpose. You see, if I keep looking for the queen and moving frames around, well, she's just going to be moving throughout the colony. So she's going to be like trying to hit a moving target. But back over at the smaller hive, it's not using the top deep too much, so I just set it off to one side. It's essentially empty, except just for a few bees that are up there on guard duty. The 3 frames I pulled out of the larger colony were all capped brood. I take 2 of them, and I look at them again, and I look at them again, and I look at them again just to be sure the queen isn't there, because I don't know where she is in that bigger colony. And then I put them beside the brood nest in the smaller colony, but I leave a space open in the center. I check for my new queen on the 3 empty frames that I've just removed from the smaller hive. I don't want to move the new queen. I'd like to just take 3 empty frames from somewhere. So I had a good look. I had a good look again. I tried to reassure myself. I probably don't know where she is either, but I see eggs. So I feel like she's still on the job. So I try to move these either essentially empty or outright empty frames, and I just set them outside the colony. I return to the larger colony, and I search for a frame of uncapped brood, which I will position pretty much in that center spot of the smaller hive. So far, in the smaller hive, I've replaced the queen, and I've given the colony 2 frames of capped brood and a single frame of uncapped brood, in addition to the two original spotty frames of brood that they had. And I consolidated that brood nest in the center of the bottom deep, and then I put these three empty frames from the smaller hive into the larger hive at the edge of that cluster unit up top. I've checked the smaller hive for diseases like American fowl brood. I found none. A quick glance at the frames that I was transferring to the smaller hive, I didn't see any sign of disease on that. I did consider, hypothetically, and this story now, this is just a fictional story, I did consider moving frames of honey, but a nectar flow is on, and the smaller colony had a bit of honey, so no, not at this time. I brought along two ratchet straps, and I reassembled both hives. I didn't put the honey supers back on for this, and then I ratchet strapped them together individually, and then I strain and I groan, and using those straps as handles, I switched the positions of the hives so that the larger hive is now where the smaller hive was sitting, and vice versa. I've caused a lot of confusion now. Bees are flying everywhere in this story. Since I've got a nectar flow underway and the bees are not particularly aggressive, I did not choose to recage my new queen in the small hive. I have been occasionally smoking both hives, and I've seen no indications of bees fighting. But anyway, for precautions, I put entrance reducers on both hives, and now, after the moving and relocating, repositioning hives is finished, I put the two supers back on the large hive, and then I empty, and that empty deep back on the smaller hive, and then I reassemble both of them. So they're put back together. Now, in this new position, the smaller hive has been given a new queen, three frames of brood, and the field force from a larger hive. I didn't elect to shake any bees off the frames. Honestly, the larger hive got nothing out of this deal but three empty frames and a temporarily reduced foraging population. A week later, let's go back to this story. Let's just say I return a week later on another nice day when the bees are flying. I don't think they're going to be happy to see me coming, but I look at both hives and I remove the entrance reducers. Both colonies are queen right, but as I expected, the larger hive is still considerably larger. That's what I wanted. The time is passing, and the nectar flow now is beginning to wane. I remove three frames of either capped or uncapped brood, checking all the frames for the queen, and once again, bump up the brood population of the smaller hive by giving it three frames of brood. As before, the larger hive gets three empty frames. This time I don't reposition the hives, nor do I transfer adult bees. By now, my second queen has arrived, and I proceed to requeen the larger hive. And I remember my admonishment to be patient. While I and my two colonies have made good progress, and both are now similar in size, they're still far from being twins. I decide to wait until the summer dearth to see how well the smaller unit responds. I'll check back on this second requeening project in the larger hive in about 2 weeks. So I got a bit of honey from both colonies, but at this point, I'm not certain that it's surplus honey. If all goes well during the fall flow, I'll need to leave all that honey for wintering purposes, but I've essentially spent much of the spring and summer equalizing these two colonies. Listeners, I need to say again, from start to finish, this descriptive episode has been entirely fictional, but it's been typical. I hope it gives you an idea of the decision-making process, the hurdles to be faced by the two colonies and you, and the time that it's going to take. There's a variation on this theme, and it's one that I have to do much more often, and this package is in small swarms. So it's not a big jump to envision a package of bees or a small swarm being the smaller hive in my fictional episode that I discussed. The package can be subsidized from a larger hive in exactly the same way, except much easier. The queen does not need replacing in this case. Nearly on a different subject, if you install multiple packages at the same time, you can expect some package colonies to acquire more bees than others, as disoriented bees fly all about, looking for a home. It's not uncommon to return to the yard a few days later and equalize package strength among these new package colonies. Swarms can be equalized in exactly the same manner as described. The swarm queen will be suspect. She should probably be replaced as soon as the colony is stabilized because she's already an older queen. Normally, colonies initiated from swarms develop strangely quickly, but if you feel it's necessary, a swarm can be given help also. Once the colonies are similar and queens are comparable, simple brood frame transfers are normally enough to approximate equalization. However, rarely, can I say never, will all the colonies in your yards be clones of each other. As I said earlier, and over and again, everything varies. Something as mundane as where a particular hive is positioned could play a part. It's commonly known in beekeeping that colonies on the ends of the rows pick up forager bees from colonies in the center of the row. Who knows why some colonies thrive while others languish when all are being exposed to the same resources? The cold truth. I rarely go to much effort to equalize colonies that are mostly similar. Too much work and too much risk. So if they're in the ballpark, I'm not going to try to make them exact. So put yourself in the real yard. In the real world, there are not two colonies, but say there's 20. So which colony becomes the standards? Do you equalize number 3 with number 12? Or do you equalize number 7 with number 9? A more traditional approach would be to mentally evaluate the colonies, determine the disease and the queen status of the small colonies, and make general changes in brood sharing. Again, this is just you guessing. Additionally, all this brood sharing recommendation assumes that you, the beekeeper, are proficient at recognizing fairly specifically American fowl brood. It's not all that common, but I guess it could be a topic for a future article, but I must say that beekeepers are the primary way that diseases like American fowl brood is spread. So after having written now about 2,800 words here, I tell you that doing the right thing, equalizing, can sometimes be the wrong thing. Always do no harm. Listeners, when I finished writing this and reread it, I added an addendum. I said, and I quote, "As I reread this piece before submitting it, I had the clear thought that equalizing colonies approaches diminishing returns. Don't hit the better colony so hard that you end up with two essentially marginal colonies." And future article, I may address working only with marginal colonies to make them stronger and don't diminish the productive colonies. Equalizing colonies should aid the weaker colony without a serious loss to the better colony. And then I said, if in doubt, don't. Basically, what I was trying to say is that some of you may have the philosophy that the strong got to be strong for a reason, and you shouldn't pull from them. They're essentially your seed corn. They're going to be the producers in the yard. So don't take away from them to pump up the small ones. Some people would say just work with the small ones. If you've got small colonies, combine them together to make large colonies or better colonies, and probably replace the queens in those, but you would never touch the big colonies. But see, what if you just had 2 colonies? What if you just had 10 colonies? What if you had 2,000 colonies? Everything is going to have a different approach on how you go about this process. But I'll end on this note. It's always an unachievable goal to have all colonies exactly the same. I think it's a much more realistic goal to have all colonies similar. Been kind of a tedious topic I put you through here. Thank you so much for listening. Read, prepare this winter, be ready for next spring. always do the right thing. If in doubt, don't. I'm Jim, telling you bye until we can talk next month. Bye-bye.